Talking with TD. Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Yeah, here we go. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. We got a loaded show as we do each and every week. It's a quick turnaround. The Titans were able to come out with a victory over the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, 28-23. Thursday night football, all eyes will be on the Titans as they go to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. We're going to have ESPN NFL Nation Steelers reporter Brooke Pryor on to talk shop about that. We got Run TMC with Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. We got David James over there making it happen.
Yes, sir.
This is what we do each and every week. So we'll go ahead and kick it off. I think it's just, we got to talk about Will Levis and just what he was able to do. Some of the throws that he made were just unbelievable. And it wasn't just the ones that he completed. That one throw to Treylon Burks, I think it was the second series, man, when he put it out there, Richie Grant was able to swoop in. And I don't know if he got his hands on the ball, but he was able to distract it enough to where Burks wasn't able to bring it in. But that deep crosser, the way that he was able to just get that in there, and that was a throw that, you know, I get taking the risk and taking the shot. And that's what you do when you're a quarterback like Will Levis, you know, but you could dump it down. Derrick Henry was open in the flat, but nevertheless, man, like that let that defense know from the jump, we are going vertical on you. That's what that play said. And that's what Will Levis said to them on that play. And sure enough, that's what he did. I love the way he pushed the ball down the field. And that's something that, you know, in talking to some of the receivers and then also talking to some of the defensive players, I mean, they said, hey, look, this is what he was doing the whole time. None of them were surprised by that. You heard what Jeffrey Simmons was like, man, hey, that guy Will could play. You know what I mean? And then he turned to, I think it was DeNico Autry after the first touchdown. I was like, I told you. And you saw it. You saw it. That throw to DeAndre Hopkins, you know, it showed the trust, that first touchdown. It was like, you know, he got to the top of his drop and he said, and it was a beautiful play action. Like the way they isolated DeAndre Hopkins to the field side, one-on-one with A.J. Terrell, and he took him to school. And some will say offensive pass interference. It just looked like the refs were letting him play. But I really like the way he just said, you know what? D-Hop is down there somewhere. I'm going to get him the football. And I talked to him on Friday about that, and he definitely said that DeAndre Hopkins is one of those guys. Even when he's covered, he's open. And they spent a lot of time in the film room together, and they're going to have to do that a little bit more, and we'll get into that in a second. But I think when you look at Will Levis and his performance, and it wasn't, again, just the throws that he completed. By the way, that throw to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, crazy. Traveled in the air, probably to 65 yards. I mean, you're rolling out to your right. You're over there almost at the numbers, and you're throwing the ball to the opposite, almost corner pylon in the end zone. Westbrook-Ikhine, he had his get somewhere shoes on. He got up underneath that and went and tracked it down. Really awesome play by them. So there's a lot to be excited about when you look at Will Levis. And even, you know, there was another one where the pressure was in his face, right? And they had the screen working. Or no, it was a check down. The screen, Derrick Henry was the check down, and he dirted it real quick. Avoided getting sacked. You know what I mean? Live to see another play. And even that third and four at the end of the game, the play action, and they wanted to take a shot, take a chance, and it wasn't there. And he wisely just went down. And the thing was situational awareness, right? He could have tried to throw it away. You know what I mean? But if he threw it away, it's an incompletion. The Falcons keep a timeout. So he just went down and he forced them to call a timeout. Those are the type of things that you have to really like about Will Levis, in addition to the obvious, the flick of the wrist, pushing the ball 50 yards down the field with no effort. And I think that was something to really be excited about if you're a Titans fan. And look, man, I covered the team and I'm excited because I like to watch good football. And that's exactly what you got from him. And, you know, Tim Kelly, I asked him about just how they were able to give the full reins of the offense to Levis, because he wasn't just running the plays that were called. There were times where he was able to check and switch out to a different play. And he did that multiple times. So the full reign was there. And that's really good for a rookie in his first start. Here's Tim Kelly on that.
Yeah, I think it's just a testament to him and coming in and studying and taking advantage of, you know, kind of being able to sit back a little bit and really learn. He's got great guys in the room. Charles does a great job getting them ready, being able to sit there and talk to Ryan and talk to Malik. And, he did a good job taking advantage of those opportunities to continue to learn and make sure he had a full grasp of the offense.
How much did you think some of the extra things you did, like whether it's out there on Mondays after practice on those days, how much do you think that factored in?
Yeah, I think it all does. Again, it's a testament to Charles London, the amount of time that he spent with him and went out and had a good game and all that stuff paid off for sure.
So you notice how he said it's a testament to the work that he's done with Charles London. And I tell you, for those who don't know, Will Levis was going to the facility on his day off, going in there on Mondays. I talked to Colton Dow and he said he called it a QB training. I think that's the word that he used for it. And or QB school, something along those lines. But either way, it was just his own QB program. That's what it was. And it was a way for him to get in there, throw with some of the receivers, but also do some more things to understand the offense. And then after practice, Levis, Willis, and the receivers, whether they were practice squad or guys that didn't get as much time in games like Colton Dow, they would march up and down the field executing the offense that was going to be in the game plan for the week. They would go in and they would execute that. And then also, when he's running scout team, he's going in and Mike Vrabel's going to have you guys call it and digest it and get in and out of the huddle like it's our own offense. That's what Mike Vrabel told him. And he said, don't go where the defense wants you to go. Throw to the guy that's open. So it was all a preparation. And there's a story about that on ESPN.com. You could check that out. It posted Thursday morning. So make sure you check that out. It goes into detail just how that preparation process happened. So you definitely like that they were able to bring him along and get him ready. It's going to be a big question, though, going forward, who should be the quarterback? I think it probably should be Levis. And that's a lot coming from me because, I'm an advocate for Ryan Tannehill. But at this point, just looking at how things came alive for that whole team, I would stick with Levis going forward. And that's what you're going to do after this year anyway. So you're just getting an early start on it. Now, this Steelers game, loud environment, it's going to be a tough place to play. But guess what? The Titans are preparing for that. They did this week. They played Sticks Renegade by Sticks. But just being able to communicate, that's a big thing. The nonverbal communication. And that's something that they're working on. Here's DeAndre Hopkins on that very feature that they're looking to make sure is in place.
Today, starting at practice today, communicating to him throughout the whole trip there, not just on the practice field, but just communicating with him in the meeting room like today, and just being on the same page.
That nonverbal part of it, though, how do you develop that?
That kind of comes with, his understanding of football and my knowledge as well. And just him seeing things on film, me seeing things on film. But Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator, getting him on the same page with us receivers and offensive line.
So you heard what Hopkins said, right? It's something that starts today. Now, this was when I spoke to him on Tuesday. And I thought it was interesting how he said it goes all the way into Thursday. So they're doing extensive things to make sure that those hand signals, just the understanding that they both have. Okay, we get this look. I'm going to turn that route this way. Make sure you throw it here. I like it here in this situation. And that's the communication that they're working on to get on the same page. And it's a loud environment, but guess what? Will Levis is looking forward to it. Here's Will Levis on playing at what I call Heinz Field, but it's Acrisure Stadium.
I mean, first NFL game with this type of environment. Definitely something to think about. I've played in loud stadiums before, so I know the challenges that come with it. Just being clear with your communication, making sure that, our operation and how we're going to handle things and how things might be different compared to a home game, that we're all locked in on that. But the guys have been great so far this week with the reps we've got, and we just got to keep building.
So we went into detail about the offense, and obviously there's a lot to be excited about, right, with what they're able to. Derrick Henry, 100 yards. DeAndre Hopkins, 100 yards. Will Levis, 4 touchdowns. Westbrook McKinney, a bomb for a touchdown. Receivers caught 4 touchdowns in the game. That's more than they've had all season. Those are really outstanding things. But guess what? The defense had a really good game as well. And that's something that we have to make sure doesn't go unnoticed, right? A couple guys that a lot of people around here get on all the time. Azeez Al-Shaair, he had an outstanding game. I mean, this dude was all over the place. And I'm talking about making hits. And that's something to look at. Christian Fulton had a couple solid tackles. And then he also had a good play where he, and I think it was Kyle Pitts, or no, it was Drake London. You know, he went up with Drake London, a known jump ball specialist, and he was able to force the incompletion. 2 good games for them. But those guys up front, my goodness, they were wrecking shop. You had Jeffrey Simmons, 2 sacks, including a strip sack. He was unblockable. There was one where he went against Chris Lindstrom, and he just, like, bodied him. It was crazy. Like, he hit him, and Lindstrom flew out the way, and he went and he made the tackle. He hit Bijan Robinson another time, and it was like a cartoon, man. It was crazy. So you got Simmons doing that. Denico Autry had a sack. He had a batted pass as well, so they're getting back to that. And Harold Landry, though, that's the one I wanted to point out. He had an outstanding game. 2 sacks. It could have been 3. There was one where it was, he was kind of running by the quarterback, and he was able to get his hand up and bring him down, but it was a hand to the face, personal foul, so it negated that sack. But don't look now, Harold Landry is actually coming into form. And he got into that after the game. Here's what he had to say about just what he was able to do the last couple weeks.
No, for sure. I felt like every time someone made a play, the whole team was feeding off of it. That's how it's got to be. We know how good we are up front, man, and we just got to go out there and cut it loose.
I think for you, that's 3 sacks now in the last 3 games, maybe, after a little bit of a slow start. Do you feel kind of back to what everybody is used to seeing from Harold Landry at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I forgot who I told, but I feel like I've been feeling better and better. Like I said, in the first 3 weeks, I was dealing with something else that kind of didn't allow me to practice as much as I wanted. And, these past two weeks, I've been able to practice full speed every day and work on my rush plan and everything that I want to do in the game. So that's a big factor for me, being able to practice and work on my stuff. In the NFL, like, it's a long season, you know what I'm saying? I don't ever get too high or too low. I just keep working, trying to improve, and that's what I'm going to be following this game.
So one thing we know, this team, they feed off of each other, right? Derrick Henry has a crazy run. The defense goes crazy, right? They get a sack. Harold Landry does his thing, whoever. The offense goes crazy. Will Levis throws a touchdown. You see Jeffrey Simmons going nuts and running over to the, to congratulate him when he comes off the field. Ryan Stonehouse, we've got to mention him too, because the way he's been punting the football, Eric Garra fielding the ball really well. So there's a lot that went right for the Titans in this game. The Falcons, they're, a top-level defense, although they did go for most of the game without Grady Jarrett. And you look, there's going to be some monsters that they'll be going against with the Steelers, so I don't think it's going to be as easy of a job, so to speak. But I think the Titans are up for it, and, we're going to get into that next with Chris Sanders. I got to get his protection. I need that, too. No, I'm kidding. I got to get his prediction for this game, and we'll get into that when we go to the break. And don't forget, we got Brooke Pryor, ESPN NFL Nation Steelers reporter. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run DMT. For you. Fresh.
Here they come. Music fades. The lights dim. Do, 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 do. Where are we going? And now, coming to you live from Inglewood, California,
your Los Angeles Clippers at power forward from Kansas, number 5, Danny Manning.
And now, the head coach of the Temple Owls, John Chaney.
What did I say? I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
I'll tell you. I'll tell you. Dude, that dude was so funny, man. He was intense every time, man.
He was ready to hurt.
Hey, how do you say it again?
I'll kill you.
And then his hairline was back real far.
Yo, and he looked like he had sleep in 7 years.
You're like, wake up. Wake up.
Yo,
what's going on? You silly
that's
man.
That's crazy.
What's cracking lacking, boss? What about them Titans,
tell
man?
Tell me what's cracking, man. I'm over here in the city, black and yellow.
Black and yellow,
Getting ready to see what this game does, man. It's going to be a real exciting matchup, and we'll get into that. I think let's just hit the – let's rewind back to Sunday.
Ooh.
Look at what the Titans were able to do against the Falcons. I guess first things first. I know you didn't expect a 4-touchdown performance. I didn't expect a 4-touchdown performance. But what do you make of Will Levis's performance?
You know what? It looks like he's been there before. And everybody's talking about how calm and confident he was. He was really, really confident. But I was watching him warm up. He had something about himself. If you watch him, he had like a little – it ain't like it was an attitude. It was like a confidence. Like, y'all don't know what I'm about to do. I'm about to light this field up. And when you watch him walk out there the first time, it wasn't like he's looking around like the stage is too big for him. He was like, I've done this before. I played at the University of Kentucky. I made plays before. I got a strong arm, and I know I can get it done. But I didn't know he was going to throw 4 touchdowns, 19 for 29, and 238 yards. That dude balled out.
Yeah, and if you remember on the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show,
what you said?
When we got to talk, remember I said that. I said, man, he got that walk. And that swagger to him, like he's about to handle some business. Like, you're 100% right there. But when you look at yourself, right, you are a serious vertical threat. So when you have a guy that could just flick of the wrist, shoot the ball 50 to 60 yards down the field, what does that do for the vertical passing game?
Man, it helps it out big time. It opens up so many things. And also, too, is it makes you play in a two-safety look because you got a guy that can go down the field. I'm going to give you a perfect example. We were playing the Cincinnati Bengals. It's 1995, and we're playing on the AstroTurf. We're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. And I was a rookie. So what they did is, like, oh, he's a rookie. We can put, another defensive back on him. Man-to-man coverage, cover one. You trying to press me. Touchdown number one, 46 yards. Okay, they're like, he just did it one time. But number two, before the second half, 60-yard touchdown. So when I start making those touchdowns, they started to put us take a safety out of the box and put him over top, and then that's when the running game can be better. So it just the vertical threat doesn't just make the passing game; it makes the running game good because they have to put a safety over top.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's what I asked Derrick Henry after the game. As I was asking the question, he flashed a smile because he knew what it was, you know what I mean,
as far as
how it's going to help him. Another thing I want to ask you is, so you look at certain plays, right? The throw to Treylon Burks, like that wasn't exactly the first read in the progression. I don't even know if it was the third read in the progression. But nevertheless – it's a throw that he made. I'm not sure that, you know, as a receiver in that type of situation, you would expect it, you know. Mm-hmm. But tell me, I know it was only two men on that route, but tell me, like, when you have a quarterback like Levis, how much does that impact just how you have to literally run every single route to the fullest? Because he may throw a ball to you that he probably shouldn't, but he's able to get it there.
You know, you got to stay alive on every play. They may call a play to where you're thinking you're just clearing it out. Just say you got a combination route. You got a go route. You get a number one receiver running a go route and a number two guy, you know, running a 10-yard out. We call it a cash route. And all of a sudden, that corner kind of just sits a little bit and he lets the number one wide receiver go. He may be looking at the number two receiver, come off that, throw it to the number one wide receiver, and all of a sudden he makes some plays. So I think the one thing that Will Levis did so well is he just took the plays that he knew where he was going to throw the ball. Am I making any sense? It's kind of like I'm looking at the coverages. Cover one, I know that he's going to be open, and I know he's going to be in that spot where I expect him to be. And every route, every receiver was in the right spot, and they made the play. So I think that that's great by not just receivers but the quarterback also.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. And those throws, they were crazy.
Oh, man. That one that threw the NWI was insane off his back foot.
Back foot, and it's like NWI, he hit 21 miles per hour on that. Then he hit the Billy White shoes on him. That was dope.
Yeah,
so
but
he had
it was...
that. But go ahead.
Okay, no, you go. You got it.
The other three, they went to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
A complete explosion for Hopkins. He didn't have any touchdowns through the first 6 weeks, three in this one. What do you make of Hopkins and the way he was able to get in position to catch the football and the acceleration he showed on the third touchdown as well?
Yeah, but that's his game. I mean, first of all, I want to start with the coverage. The coverage that I saw one safety high. They were going man-to-man on the outside. When I see that as a quarterback, I really don't have to go through my progression. I just got to let my wide receiver work. When I say let my wide receiver work, is I got the receiver's got to get him off his spot, stack him, and throw it and let your wide receiver go and make some plays. Look at the touchdown that Hopkins made. That long one that he made, I think it was 46 yards, I can't remember. Then all of a sudden that other one, it's a shallow cross. Those are man beaters. So all the quarterback is doing, Will Levis is doing, is making sure his guy wins. When the wide receiver wins, he just throws the ball to a spot and lets the wide receiver work. The first touchdown Hopkins made, he just threw the ball up and let your receiver make a play. That just shows you he has trust in Hop.
I knew that was the case, too, because it's funny.
Absolutely.
I asked him, I said, you know, how much is Hopkins at one of those receivers where he's open even when he's covered? And he smiled and he said, yeah, that's definitely the case. But he, like a veteran, he said, well, I don't want to force it to him. But he still, spoke about being able to get him the football.
Yep.
So you have this game against the Steelers coming up, and obviously it's one of those matchups where it's like, this is a tough environment. This is one where you got to make sure the communication is right.
Yep.
For you, like, what's the key in making sure, like, you and Steve McNair, what was the key in making sure you guys were on the same page?
I think that with the quarterback, with Levis and the wide receivers, they got to make sure they study film, because if you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're moving everywhere. I mean, they got safeties moving everywhere. They got corners moving everywhere. They blitz from the boundary corner. Then also, if you look at their front is consistently standing up and they're consistently moving. Will Levis has got to make sure that he understands where the pressure's coming from, and he got to understand where that safety is going to be at. I think that's going to be the key, because if you look at last week when he went against the Falcons, it was really easy. It was cover one high. When I say cover one, that's man-to-man on the outside and one safety high. That's easy to read. But when you got, you know, corners moving, you got safeties are moving, you got zone blitzing, you got where's the pressure, he's going to have to make sure that he understands where the pressure's coming from.
Do you remember just the toughest environment you played in, and was it here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Oh, Lord, man, Pittsburgh, you better have every pad on. You better have your mouth guard in. You better have extra air in your helmet, all those things, because it's going to be a physical game. And I'm telling you, Pittsburgh, when they had the old stadium, that was one of the hardest places to play. It was loud. You know, they had the terrible towels going on. You got the crowd screaming at you. You got the weather was cold. It was snowing and sometimes. That place was probably the hardest place that I ever played, because just not the environment, but you better get ready, because you're going to get hit square in the mustache.
Yeah, and then when you look at just the fans and everything involved, like, how much did that interfere with how you guys tried to communicate on offense?
Yeah, that's a great question, TD. You got to communicate with signals. When I say signals, just say if they can't hear you and they call two plays in a huddle, just say if they call split right, 360 sliver, and then he calls another play and he says split left, 361, you know, out and up. What he's going to do is if he wiggles his hand, that means he's checking to the second play, and he's not even saying anything. You just got to understand, as a wide receiver, when they make that second check, I may not hear him say it, but I'm looking at the signal, and then I'm watching the ball with his hike. So I got to actually do that and be on the same page with the quarterback.
So we said all of that. What is the synopsis? Do you think this is a Titans win?
I really do, and the reason why I say this is because the way their defense played last week, man, that pass rush was incredible. It was swarming defense. They had 5 sacks. Simmons had 2. Landry had 2. And here's what Landry said. He said we were feeding off each other's energy.
Yes.
If they go in the same game with that same energy, with that same tenacity, with that same attitude, in my opinion, I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers have a chance. I know they got some explosive, you know, wide receivers and George Pickens, and then you got a running back, Najee Harris, and you got Kenny Pickett, the quarterback. But at the end of the day, if you get pressure and you have Simmons just throwing grown men to the ground like you ain't even there, I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers can handle this. I understand they're coming off a tough loss, you know, last week, but I just don't think that they can handle it. And I think the guy that's going to be a major, 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 major part of this game is Ryan Stonehouse. And I know that sounds kind of funny, because if you look at last week, he averaged 52 yards per punt, and then he had the Falcons start at the 7, the 12, the 13, and the 15. So if the Pittsburgh Steelers start at the 7, the 12, or the 13, and the 15, I don't think they're patient enough to have a long drive against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to be able to flip the field when necessary. So that's a really good point that you mentioned there.
Yes, sir.
So before I get you out of here, though, man,
I was waiting.
I was watching. So my daughter flew in from Philly, my daughter Simone, and we got to spend some time. And
okay.
I said, let's
okay.
put on a funny movie. So I put on this movie called Hollywood Shuffle, right? And we're working through it, and, you know, this guy was on there. He had the mini afro with a part. And my daughter was like, Dad, that picture you sent me, the promo for your segment, Run TMC, is that the guy? I said, no, that's not Chris Sanders. That's Robert Townsend.
But hey, guess what I was watching? Me and my daughter was watching The Temptations. You know, it was talking about their life and everything. So these guys were on stage, or the Temptations were on stage, and they were singing a song, I Got Nothing But Love For You, Baby. And then the head singer was Otis Redding. I said, she said, Daddy, is that TD that you work? I said, no, man, that's Otis Redding.
Oh, man, we out of here on that.
This is Azizo Shire, and I'm talking with TD.
Yeah. You know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah.
You know what it is. You hear the music, so you know where we're going. We are going to Pittsburgh. Thursday night football, the Titans and Steelers. Who better to speak with than one of my personal favorites? ESPN NFL Nation Steelers reporter, none other than Brooke Pryor. Brooke, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. I just had to break out my snow stuff. It's not like we don't have a blizzard in Pittsburgh, but I promise you I saw flakes today, which means it's going to be a chilly one tomorrow night for Thursday night football. I'm pumped.
Yeah, I'm pumped, but I'm unprepared. I'm going to have to go to one of these stores and get a Scully, you know, to put over this bald head to keep me warm. But, hey, we'll work it out.
They have plenty of those here. I think you'll be prepared. It might be black or gold. I don't know if they're selling things in other colors at this point in the year, but you might get lucky. You might find like a nice blue or olive green or something, you know, seasonal and festive.
Okay, well, I'll have to figure it out. And speaking of figuring things out, that seems to be what the Steelers have done with Kenny Pickett. You had your story from yesterday that he's playing for sure. I know you're right there in the locker room when he has said that. What happened? What made it turn around so quickly for him?
You know, I think it's sheer willpower on his part. This is the second time this year that he's had what looked like a pretty serious or at the very least painful injury in game, had to exit early, and then has been able to play the next week. This is, of course, a faster turnaround than from Houston to Baltimore, but in that situation there was a thought, hey, he's dealing with a knee bruise, a deep contusion, and they have the bye after the Ravens game, which is typically very physical, so hey, wouldn't hurt to sit out and, you know, let that heal up. And he came out and he played, and this is very much a similar scenario, although it's a faster turn from Sunday to Thursday. Kenny Pickett had a ribs injury that he got on a hit from a Jacksonville Jaguars defensive end. He left at halftime. He tried to warm up, and he just couldn't go. And so there was a thought, you know, that maybe he's not able to go on a short week, but he was limited in practice, at least in the estimation. And then in the walkthrough, he was, I believe, limited. But, you know, it's a walkthrough, so how much are they doing anyway? And he was asked, you know, are you going to play? And he said, for sure. And so that's, you know, I think for Kenny Pickett, he's a gamer. He wants to get back out there, and he doesn't want to sit on the sideline and also run the risk of a guy like Mitch Trubisky coming in and maybe, you know, outperforming what he's done and create some questions about the starting quarterback. So Pickett said, hey, I'm going to be good. I'm going to call my own shot. It works in the fourth quarter. Maybe it'll work coming off this injury.
Yeah, that's really interesting how that came about. And I get it, right? You look on the flip side, you got Ryan Tannehill went out. Will Levis is in and here he's going to start. And we'll see what happens going forward there. But entering the season, after such a successful preseason, some people had picked the Steelers to do really well. But that offense has really been struggling to the point where people are calling for Matt Canada to be fired. What has gone wrong offensively for this team?
It's probably easier to, or shorter at least, talk about what's gone right, because the answer is everything has gone wrong. You know, it depends week to week. The problem, while it has the same results, the process to get there isn't the same. Different problems are causing this team to not score points and to not move the ball down the field. Sometimes it seems like it's the play calling. You know, I know that Steelers fans are tired of seeing the jet sweep. But it isn't always the play calling. It isn't always that they're running at predictable times, which Jacksonville players, I was talking with Jalen Warren this week, Steelers running back, and he said that, yeah, there were Jacksonville guys saying after the play, we know which way you were going to run, or even before, hey, we know where you're going, things like that. And I asked Jalen, I said, do you think they really do, or is this a gamesmanship thing? And he said it's probably a little bit of both, because, you know, for one thing, in football, it's not uncommon for the defense to have an idea of what the offense is going to run. On the other hand, that's been a criticism of the Steelers since Matt Canada has taken over, that it's too predictable. And so, you know, whether they know it or not, at least saying it is something that they think will mess with Steelers players' heads. And then at the same time, though, sometimes the script is right. Sometimes the opening script that hasn't produced many points is spot on, and the Steelers just aren't executing. And that was pretty clear in the Jacksonville game, where the first drive of the game, the Steelers came out throwing, and they had a couple of opportunities over the middle of the field, some intermediate passes, some plays that should have produced at least a first down, and Pickett overthrew it, or Deontay Johnson had a drop. There was another series where he underthrew a pass. Pickett has not been consistent at all, and while he can get things going in bursts, and he had a drive right before he got hurt where they kicked a field goal that they were moving the ball well. Deontay Johnson was making catches. Pickett was 5 of 6. Things looked good, but previously that had really just been reserved for the fourth quarter. And it's just, for whatever reason, they can't seem to get going earlier. So there's not one person or group of people at fault. Just there is a breakdown from top to bottom.
So with that being said, George the Alien Pickens, that was a great story, by the way, that you did on him. But you look, the explosives are coming. He has 5 of 20 or more yards, including 2 of 40 or more. How is he handling just the lack of success that's going on recently? I mean, 1 reception on 5 targets. How has he been in this short week and then also before that?
You know, he's frustrated. He is a very fiery player. He, you know, says that he's getting the ball enough, so he's at least saying the right things off the field to us and in the locker room this week. But at the same time, I mean, I look at the game before Jacksonville in L.A., where he got 2 penalties, 1 for a blindside block and another for taunting after he made a catch. And that's just the kind of emotional player that he is, that, you know, it's great because that's what makes him so good. You need that arrogance as a wide receiver, and he certainly has that. But at the same time, it's what can lead him to being more frustrated, more visibly frustrated, more vocally frustrated. And it can in turn then hurt the team in the form of penalties. Or last year when he came off the field in Atlanta after not getting targeted on a 3-and-out and was yelling, throw me the expletive ball. I mean, this is a guy who you want to keep happy, and that's really hard when the offense isn't A, extending drives, and B, when he's getting doubled and they leave Deontay Johnson open. It seems like, you know, defenses with Deontay Johnson back, they do kind of have to pick their poison. Somebody's going to end up being free, and that somebody has been Johnson, because offenses or defenses don't want to let George Pickens get on a roll. So I think that it's something that is certainly worth watching Thursday night to see how he handles it. He's also, you know, there have been 2 throws at least in the last 2 weeks that have been on the sideline, throws that he normally would come down with inbounds and make this insane catch, But Pickett is not keeping him in bounds. The ball is going just a touch too wide, and it ends up not being a completed pass. Even though Pickens makes it, he doesn't get both feet down in bounds. So something to definitely watch on Thursday.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Steelers reporter Brooke Breyer. Brooke, I really, really like Cam Hayward. He's one of my favorite defensive linemen to watch. Apparently, there's a chance that he plays tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yeah, there is. In fact, I was just double-checking that my phone was vibrating, and I thought, oh, gosh, is this the announcement that they're activating him? That hasn't come out yet. But, yeah, there's absolutely a chance that he plays tomorrow. They opened the 21-day practice window for him to return from IR last week, and which was interesting timing because just a few days earlier, Mike Tomlin had said, like, oh, there's no update on him. Well, there was in a couple days. But this is a guy that I think would make a huge difference if he can play because their run game has not been very good. And then it leads to Minka Fitzpatrick back there at safety having to make these game-saving tackles. And guess what? You don't have Minka Fitzpatrick against the Titans, and you're about to face Derrick Henry, so good luck. This is a team that needs to have somebody step up there and clog up the middle. Larry Ogunjobi is good for, you know, maybe one or two tackles for loss, maybe a sack in the first half. He seems to get a play in the first quarter, and then he quiets down. Montrevious Adams, Keanu Benton, all of these guys are good in spurts, but there is not someone who is consistently able to play to the level that Cam Hayward plays when he's in there and he's healthy. So he could be a huge difference maker if he's available.
Absolutely. And anybody that has watched the Steelers, especially, I mean, Monday Night Football, you saw what they did against the Browns. I mean, T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith, we don't even have to talk about them. We know that they're forces. But I think when you look at Minka Fitzpatrick, that's someone you mentioned, and he's going to be out. Who will be there to replace him? Is that going to be DeMonte Casey, or who's going to fill in for him?
You know, it'll be a combination. I think it'll be Casey. It'll be Keanu Neal. Elijah Riley, I would expect to be involved. Miles Killebrew. I mean, it's very much going to be a safety by committee situation with Minka Fitzpatrick out, especially because they like to use a three safety package. And when you're down someone like Minka, that becomes a lot harder to execute well. I would not be surprised to see Patrick Peterson play safety. That's something that they have slowly started to shift him into. It was something that they talked about when he signed with the Steelers in free agency, and he has not been as strong at corner, I think, as they had expected him to be. It's clear that this is a guy that is an older all-pro type of corner. He doesn't have the same speed that he used to. The instincts are there, but his body just can't play the way that he's accustomed to it doing. So with Joey Porter Jr. now being a starter is what Terrell Austin said. Of course, it's going to depend the package and everything else like that. But I think that we could see them end up using Patrick Peterson at safety more.
I'm glad you mentioned both of those. And it's funny, Patrick Peterson, I guess he's taking the Rod Woodson route to move from corner to safety. But you mentioned Joey Porter becoming a junior, that is, becoming a starter. That interaction that you got to see during training camp and during individual period between he and Patrick Peterson, what was that like as far as like being able to bring him along?
Yeah, I think that Patrick Peterson signing here in free agency was as much about what he could do on the field as it is what he's able to do off. That mentorship part is so huge because, yeah, Joey Porter Jr. obviously comes from NFL pedigree. He's grown up around teams, around the NFL, in the locker room, at training camp. But to have someone like Patrick Peterson who takes so much pride in being a mentor and being that veteran presence to really help a guy along, I think that's huge for Joey, that it's someone that both challenges him and encourages him. I mean, he kind of feels like the little brother of the locker room. Like, they are all so genuinely excited after he got the pick against the Ravens. They were all so pumped for him. And it's just really awesome to see that. And, like, there were a couple instances after training camp practices where Ike Taylor's out there, and he is a DB scout for the Steelers now. And he was going over some things with Joey, like, hey, here's how to use your hands, here's how to tackle better, things like that. And so he's really like it takes a village thing to like raise a kid. It feels like this football team as a village, the secondary from coaches to scouts to teammates to his dad's old teammates, all of these guys are really pouring themselves into Joey Porter Jr. And it's working so far. He's playing really well, especially for a rookie. His tackling has to get better. He's not, you know, a flawless player by any means, but there is a lot of good that has come out of his early season playing time, playing snaps.
That matchup with DeAndre Hopkins is going to be really fun. Last week, or actually Sunday, the Falcons had A.J. Terrell travel with him. We'll see what happens with Porter Jr. and the Steelers. But before I get you out of here, I have to ask you, because I know you have a good relationship with Mike Tomlin. What is, if I say what the funniest or most unique story you could think of with Mike Tomlin, what would that be in your time that you've covered the Steelers?
Oh, man, there's so many. But, you know, one that jumps to mind just the other day we had, yeah, it's funny because the thing is, Mike Tomlin does not show you his funny personality, his like human side in season. It's only like not during the season that you see him when we're in off the record settings that he kind of drops it. But just the other day, I was leaving the Steelers locker room. I was talking with the Steelers head PR guy, going over a story, and Mike Tomlin was standing there waiting by the Steelers cafeteria and said to me, "Hey, you guys, you're not talking business, right? Because I need him." And I said, "Well, we were, but, you know, if you must." He goes, "Well, I don't need him. I'm not talking business, but thank you. Thank you so much." And I said, "You're welcome. I'm going to remember that. You're going to have to get me back. I'm going to need that time back with him." And Mike was like, "Yeah, of course, of course." And it was just one of those, like, funny moments that Mike is very quick. He's very funny. He can be very endearing, even though he doesn't want to show that to you in a press conference. In a press conference, it is all business. It is all Tomlinisms. It is all like filibustering and making sure that, you know, he's answering all our questions before we can even ask them so that he can control every aspect of a press conference. But the moments when you can kind of pick at him and he picks at you and you build that rapport feel all that more rewarding because you know it's so rare.
That's an awesome story, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, and definitely appreciate you coming on. You know, I should have led this segment in and called it Prior Knowledge, right? Just like, get up.
Well, I have no knowledge.
I watch that, you know that. Yeah, so, all right, well, Brooke, I appreciate you coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check out all her work on ESPN.com, the Steelers page, and there's a lot to gain from someone as knowledgeable as Brooke. Thanks again, and we'll be talking soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So that was Brooke Prior. As I said, you got that prior knowledge coming from Pittsburgh. This is going to be a great game to watch. And, you know, when you guys hear this on Saturday, hopefully you'll be listening to it with a smile because it's off of a Steelers win. I want all my listeners to feel good. You know, that's the right thing. But we'll see what happens. And I appreciate Brooke Prior coming on to talk some shop. Appreciate Chris Sanders, as always. Appreciate you, David James.
Yes, sir.
And above all else, appreciate each and every one of you folks that tune in weekly and listen to Talking with TD. You guys are the best. And if you haven't done so, check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.